Chapter 12. Adaptation. How to handle idiots, i.e. everyone who isn't like you. Now let's take a look at how we can adapt to one another in order to work together. A man once said, admittedly with an ironic smile on his face, but still, that the test of intelligence is simple. If you agree with me, then you're intelligent. However, if you don't agree with me, then you are clearly and undoubtedly an idiot. I assume that you're intelligent enough to interpret this message correctly. But seriously, all of us have wondered why some people don't understand anything. As I said in the introduction, when I was young, I was often struck by the fact that people who appear to be very intelligent could, at the same time, be such complete idiots. They didn't see what I saw. Some people delicately say that such individuals lack the right intellectual elasticity. But that's only because they're too well-bred to let the word idiot come out of their mouths. People are obviously different. So what do you do about it? How should we handle people who are different from us when they react and function in completely different ways? Can you take on various kinds of personalities in different situations? An interesting question. If it were possible to behave 100% like a chameleon, completely changing your behaviour depending on who you're with, would it be a good idea to try? It's natural for us to be who we are, to exhibit our own core behaviour. But for a variety of reasons, we can feel the need to adapt to those around us. There's often a lot of talk about how we must be flexible and adaptable so that we can cope with a wide variety of situations and are able to respond to many different types of people. The term has even been given a name. EI, emotional intelligence, or EQ, emotional quotient. To cope with this constant need for adaptation, it's important that we're aware that adaptation demands effort and takes a lot of energy. Our natural condition is to exhibit our core behaviour. Our unnatural behaviour is to continually adapt to others. And this requires ability, training, and energy. If we're uncertain as to what is right in a situation, if we're untrained or lack sufficient energy to cope with a role that we currently believe is the right one, we will be frightened, hesitant, and often stressed. As a result, we lose even more energy, and our core behaviour becomes increasingly visible, often to the great surprise of those around us who are used to seeing us behave in a certain way. In a perfect world. In the best of worlds, everyone can be themselves and everything functions smoothly from the word go. Everyone agrees at all times and conflicts don't exist at all. This place is said to exist, and it's called Utopia. But it's not that simple. As I said at the beginning of this book, if you think that you can change everyone else, you'll be very disappointed. It would surprise me if you could change anyone at all. No matter who you are, red, yellow, green or blue, or a combination of multiple colours, you will always be in the minority. Most of the people you encounter will be different from you. No matter how well balanced you are, you can't be all the types at the same time. So you have to adapt to the people you meet. Good communication is often a matter of adapting to others. But wait a minute, you might be thinking, that isn't true. I can be myself. In fact, I never adapt myself for anyone, anytime, and it's gone very well. It's taken me this far in life. Absolutely. Naturally, everyone can start with themselves. That's not a problem. But then don't expect to get through to other people with the message you're trying to share. If you can live knowing that most of the people you meet won't buy what you say, well, then you don't have a problem. You already do this, even if you don't think you do. You already adapt your behaviour, even if you don't realise it. We all adapt to one another all the time. It's part of the social game, the visible and invisible communication that is constantly in progress. I'm just proposing a more reliable system. You don't have to gamble or guess. You can make the right adjustment from the beginning. But please note, usually, no system is perfect. Some people I meet don't like the idea of deliberately adapting to others. They consider it dishonest and manipulative. But again, you can always abstain. An example from real life. I'm going to tell you a true story about a man I met during a training conference many years ago. A likeable and very popular private entrepreneur who achieved great success in his field. This man, let us call him Adam, was extremely yellow. A real visionary with ambitious plans that were only occasionally put into effect. Adam had never thought about or reflected on how he behaved as a person or how he was perceived by others. There had never been any reason to. Someone had persuaded him to come to this conference, and he didn't really know what he was getting himself into. The topic that day was the same as this book. It was a full-day workshop where we worked on how to understand different behaviour profiles. After the lunch break, I saw that something was troubling Adam. His face was serious, and his body language had become very closed. When I started talking again and explaining the various profiles, he sank deeper and deeper into his chair, and it was obvious to me that he was thinking about something else. I asked what was troubling him. There was an explosion. He exclaimed, "This is wrong. How could I categorize people like that? Put people into a theoretical grid system." It turned out that he didn't like the idea of adapting to other types of people. But not because he thought that everyone had to adapt to him. No. What worried him was that he saw it as a way to manipulate others. And he didn't like it. Didn't like it at all, in fact. Everyone wondered what the real problem was. Adam believed that you couldn't categorize people this way. That using a lot of models was just wrong. He thought that it was highly dangerous not to go on pure feeling. Someone in the group made it clear to him that he, of all people, should listen, since he was the one who attracted conflict. The debate was soon in full swing, and after 30 minutes, I had to call a time out. I can understand Adam's concern, and I respect the fact that he raised the issue. What worried him was that it wouldn't work. If everyone adapted to one another, no one would be themselves any longer. In his way of thinking, that would be the greatest deception. Not to be yourself. There's something in what he said. At the same time, of course, you can always choose how much or little you modulate your behaviour. The more you learn about other people, the easier it becomes for you to make decisions. Join in the game or go your own way. The decision will always be yours. Furthermore, Adam was also deeply resentful that I, as a specialist in the field, could describe him in quite some detail and give examples of how I thought he was wired. When he looked at the assessment tool that describes an individual, he went completely silent. Ultimately, after we sat down and discussed the matter, Adam came to understand the role and benefits of behaviour assessment. But he taught me to be careful with how I use this knowledge. How often do we follow a system without knowing if it works? No system is perfect. There are always exceptions. This is just one piece of the jigsaw puzzle of human life. It's certainly a large and important piece, but it's far from the whole picture. I've divided up the sections on adaptation into two parts for each colour. The first part deals with what you need to do to interact meaningfully with another person. When you really want to get through to him and put him in a cheerful mood and make him feel like you understand him. The second part deals with how you get people to take your side. What each profile wants in a situation isn't necessarily the best thing to do to make progress. You can do a great deal of good if you choose to do so. Adapting to red behaviour. What a red expects of you. Do what I asked of you as quickly as possible, preferably even faster than that. If you ask a red, he'll agree that most people are too slow. They speak too slowly. They have trouble coming to the point, and they work ineffectively. In a red's world, everything simply takes way too long. Remember what I told you about impatience in red behaviour? About their constant pursuit of fast results? When other people turn things over in their minds from morning to night, it drives a red crazy. Thought and action are one. It has to be done quickly. If there's anything reds dislike, it's endless discussion. It makes them flip out. Conclusion. If you want to adapt to a red's tempo, hurry up, speed up, speak and act more quickly. Look at the clock often, because that's what a red does. If you can conclude a meeting in half the time, do it. If you have a red with you in the car, he won't be upset if you're a little bit over the speed limit. If you drive too slowly, he might insist on taking the steering wheel. Do you want something? Speak up. As you now know, reds are very much to the point, and they enjoy being with other people who also have the ability to tell them what they want, quickly. If you have a tendency to go around in circles before getting to the crux of the matter, you'll have difficulty getting through to a red. He'll get tired if you waste your words without due cause, and he knows when he's dealing with a chatterbox. It's very common for people to provide some background to a problem before describing the problem itself, and maybe even some more background to the solution of the problem. Forget it. It won't work. Conclusion. If you want to have a red's full attention, cut the small talk. It's vital that you're clear and straightforward. Determine the most essential point of your message and start there. Let's say that you're going to present the latest financial statement. Say what's written on the last line of the slide first. That's what a red is sitting there waiting for anyway. Then you can get into the details. Don't use a single word unnecessarily. But make sure you've done your homework when it comes to the background. Questions may come up. If a red senses that you're uncertain, you'll be grilled on the facts. Written materials should be concise and, above all, well laid out. No endless dissertations written by someone who loves the sound of his own voice. A single line jotted down on the back of the napkin will do the job. I couldn't care less what you did on vacation. Reds live in the present. Everything that happens is happening here and now. They have a unique ability to focus on what's on the current agenda. Thus, you need to stick to the topic when you speak to a Red. He has no problem with creativity or new ideas. This is always appreciated, as long as it moves you forward. But when a Red feels that you've left the agenda altogether and are beginning to fiddle-faddle, then conflict isn't that far off. The most effective method for a Red is to establish what the problem is and then just get to work. Simple, isn't it? Conclusion. Stick to the topic. The easiest way is to prepare your case very precisely before going into a meeting with a Red. If, in the middle of an interesting discussion, another thought pops into your head, write it down and ask at the end of the meeting if it's okay to raise the issue. Otherwise, schedule a new meeting. If someone with lots of Red in his behaviour asks what time it is, answer the question with the exact time. Don't say that there's plenty of time. He'll decide that himself. And again, don't forget to keep up the pace. For a Red, speed will be synonymous with efficiency. Now we're talking business. Never forget it. Being businesslike in business doesn't really sound like a novel idea. But think about it. If you're a seller, you've probably attended a number of training courses in sales where you learned that you have to build up a relationship with the customer. Get to know him. Win him over to your side. This is good advice. Do it. Build relationships as much as you deem necessary. Just don't do it with Reds. For example, if you begin a meeting with a Red whom you've never met before, nothing could be worse than asking where he lives, where he spent his last vacation, or what he thought of the game last night. Nothing could be more irrelevant to him. He's not here to chat or make friends. He's there to do business. Deeply Red individuals become downright irritated and aggressive when they notice that someone is trying to be friends with them. A Red is not here to be your pal. He's only here for one reason, to do business. He might throw you out, figuratively speaking, if he perceives your attempts to be friendly as ingratiation or fawning. This isn't something he would dream of doing himself, so neither should you. And don't flatter a Red if you don't know him well. Just leave the compliments at home. Conclusion. Paradoxically, Reds are the easiest to sell to. If you want to do good business, the only thing you need to do is step into a Red's office, present your suggestions, and then ask about a deal. Skip the football game yesterday. Never mind that you saw him in the supermarket last week. He didn't see you anyway. When a Red trusts you and has decided that you're a decent person who could be advantageous to him, well, then he may very well start discussing cars, boats, or the latest politics. Play ball with him. But then, and only then. And don't be surprised if the meeting ends mid-sentence. When he's satisfied with his socialising, he concludes it instantly. It has nothing to do with you. He's just tired of conversation. You don't actually know. Then why am I wasting my time with you? It may sound like a contradiction, but a Red would also like you to be determined and direct. Although he often demands that he make all the important decisions himself, he strongly dislikes dealing with vacillating people. Dancing the hesitation waltz does not instill trust. Comments like, It's hard to say. It depends. Or, I don't really know what to say. Just frustrate Reds. If you have an opinion, out with it. Reds judge you on how driven you are. You should listen to them, of course. But you must have an opinion of your own. Otherwise, you're weak. And that's not a quality that will win you any points. Keep in mind that we all like people in whom we could recognise ourselves. A Red won't meet other Reds every day. So when he actually does, he's pleasantly surprised. An equal. Wonderful. I've met Reds who have rubbed their hands gleefully before starting a heated debate. Conclusion. Deliver your opinion without blinking. In the end, you might have to concede, but never sell yourself short. A Red can rattle and rumble, stamp on the floor, raise his voice, and shake his fist. Many people back off in the face of this behaviour. It's not pleasant to be shouted at, is it? Well, the worst thing you can do is back away and let him walk all over you. If a Red is permitted to walk all over you, you lose something very important in his eyes. Respect. If he doesn't respect you, he'll eat you alive. And walk over you again and again and again until you become completely and totally marginalised. You won't be someone to be reckoned with in the future. A complete doormat. The best thing you can do is place yourself in the centre of the storm, telling him that he's wrong. When a Red discovers that you won't give in, he will turn in an instant. If you know what you're talking about, that is. You can sleep when you're dead. If you have a boss who is Red, he will work hard. Maybe harder than anyone else you've ever met. He will have many irons in the fire at once. And he'll have complete control over everything that's happening. A Red can live with the fact that everything won't be right the first time. But he will demand that you work hard. You should be diligent in everything. Feel free to put in overtime if you can. I urge you not to become a workaholic. Life has more to offer than work. But from the perspective of a Red boss, this would be a first-class quality. He will hold you in high esteem if he sees your commitment in the form of hard work. Conclusion. Show that you work hard. You don't need to run into the Red's office every 5 minutes, informing him that last night you stayed at work until 11:30. He might not even be impressed. He might just ask you whether such a trifling little task like that warranted the time you spent on it. But you should report back regularly about what you have done and present briefly the result of your efforts. Be willing to take initiative. Offer suggestions that the Red didn't ask for. As usual, get ready for a fight. But he will like that you're driven. Please note the wording in the preceding sentence. It doesn't say that he'll like you because you're driven. It says, like that you are driven. A Red boss may very well like you. That's sometimes the case. But don't expect lots of glowing and pleasant praise. How to behave when you meet a Red. You don't have to completely adapt to how Reds want you to behave. That would be surrendering. There are several other things you need to keep an eye on in order to achieve the results you want. Because Reds have their faults and failings, but often turn a blind eye to them, you can help to achieve a better result if you know how. Here are some points to keep in mind. Details. Boring. Essentially, Reds dislike getting into details. It's boring and takes time. Thus, Reds tend to be careless about small matters. You can accuse Reds of many things, but meticulousness isn't typically one of them. For them, the destination will always be more important than the journey. So Reds will do just about anything to achieve the desired results. Reds won't naturally stop to consider the small things or analyze their method. Conclusion. If you really want to help Reds do better work, try to demonstrate the benefits of keeping an eye on the details. Explain that the results will be better and profits larger if they just consider a couple of small but crucial elements of the project. Be prepared for the huff and puff and a general unwillingness to act on your advice. But if you're good at arguing, your advice will be followed. As we know, Reds are good at pushing themselves to the limit, just as long as they make headway. Quick, but often frightfully wrong. As I've written several times before, everything in a Red's world is usually very urgent. You can figure out for yourself the risks this entails. Putting the pedal to the metal may seem like a good idea, but only when everything else, and most of all everyone else, is on the same train. Normally, Reds rush ahead of the group, only to get annoyed when others can't keep pace. A Red needs someone who can get him to pause and realise that not everyone has grasped the situation as quickly as he has. He'll never be able to carry out all the phases of a project on his own, even if he believes he can, and probably will attempt to. He still needs to have his team with him. You've probably heard the expression, quick and wrong. Conclusion. Give examples of instances where time was lost by being too hasty. Point out the risks involved in hurrying too much. Explain that others can't keep up, and point out that it would be great if everyone knew what the project was about. Don't give in. Assert that not even he can manage everything himself. Force a Red to wait for others. Afterwards, try to discuss the event and show clearly and distinctly what was gained and how much the Red has profited by taking things a bit slower. Let's try a few completely untested ideas and see how it goes. Should we really do that? Red individuals aren't anxious about risks. Many Reds actively search for risky situations, just for the thrill of it. In fact, what others might perceive as dangerous behaviour, a Red wouldn't even think of as risky. Hey, life is risky. You won't get out of it alive. However, Reds do need someone who can weigh the advantages against the disadvantages. Disadvantages are boring, of course, so a Red individual will often simply ignore them. Since the answer to what risks you take often lies in the details, your approach should be similar to the way you handle discussing details with a Red. Conclusion. Reds calculate risks by constantly looking at the facts. Facts are something they understand. Since Reds prefer not to look backwards, old and tiring, and focus on the present and the future, a plain and honest exchange of experiences may be called for. Give examples of situations that historically were shown to be dangerous. It can be about business risks, going downhill skiing without a helmet, or calling the boss an idiot. Prove things with facts, and demand that the person thinks twice before deciding to take on a new project without first having checked the conditions. As usual, you're right. Stick to your guns and don't give in. I'm not here to be your pal, or anyone else's for that matter. Since many Reds are less relationally focused, they're frequently criticised for insisting that all relationships must take place on their terms, even in private life. People around Reds frequently feel that they're being steamrolled by their friends or co-workers. It's rarely the Red's real intention. It's just something that happens. You can't make an omelette without breaking eggs, and so on. Reds may not understand that others are avoiding them because they would rather avoid conflict. This also means that Reds can be excluded from important information. They may not feel excluded if they're not invited for a beer on Friday evening, but it's far worse for them to feel left out of important decisions. In the worst case, this can lead them to suspect that people around them are deliberately withholding important information. The power struggle is just moments away. Conclusion. Reds need to understand that the road to full transparency is to adapt to others. That thought may never even have crossed their minds. They're mostly focused on themselves and their own thing. But by realising that no one can manage everything alone, they can be prevailed upon to pause and actually care about other people. When a Red understands that many people think it's important to chat about their child's first tooth, how the cabin they rented on vacation was furnished, and about the boat they're dreaming of buying, he can listen actively and contribute to the discussion. Once a Red understands what all this small talk is about, the door is open. You may even learn something about him. What kind of weaklings are you? Just handle it. Reds just get angry. It can't be said any clearer than that. Their temperament is such that it detonates every now and then, causing migraines for everyone around. They don't notice it happening themselves. Screaming a little bit is just another way to communicate. No one likes a bully, but not everyone is willing to say so. When a Red tramples on someone's toes, you must tell him nicely that it doesn't work like that. He'll put on an innocent face and pretend he doesn't understand what you're talking about. Secretly, he'll be thinking that if some people are afraid of him, well, that's just tough. Conclusion. You should confront his behaviour immediately. Don't allow any exceptions. Just say loudly and clearly that you won't tolerate coarse remarks, nastiness, and uncalled-for tantrums. Demand adult behaviour. And if he loses his temper, just leave the room. It's important that you never let him get his way just by barking his head off. Just remember that this is a technique, bickering and brawling, that has worked for the Red for many years. As a child, he might have gotten his way by quarrelling. More than likely, his family experienced his explosive temperament in his very early years. And you can bet they just succumbed to avoid the air raid siren. Very few people have confronted him about this, meaning that the demand for calmer conversations could easily lead to even louder protests. The one thing a Red detests more than anything else is being told that he must lower his voice. Adapting to yellow behaviour. What a yellow expects of you. Isn't it nice being here all together? In essence, yellows are not afraid of conflict. If something goes wrong, they can really blow a gasket. But if possible, they prefer a pleasant and cosy atmosphere. Yellows are at their best when everyone is being friendly and the sun is shining. A yellow, however, can be very sensitive to whether people are in good spirits or not. If the people in a group are in bad spirits and aggression is pouring down like from a cloudburst, he won't be happy at all. Conclusion. A yellow functions best when he's happy and content. His creativity is at its zenith and all his positive energy flows. You should strive to create a warm and friendly atmosphere around him. Smile a lot, have fun, and laugh. Listen to his crazy jokes, laugh along at his childish remarks, and kindle the easygoing and happy-go-lucky atmosphere. If you do that, he'll feel better about you and listen to you more, which is always a good thing. A yellow in a bad mood is not much fun to be with. I asked someone to fix that tiny detail. I can't remember who, though. Keeping a yellow's interest is, in all honesty, not the easiest thing to do. There are many things that bore the socks off a yellow employee, customer, friend, or neighbour. A foolproof method to put a yellow to sleep quickly and efficiently is to bring up lots of details. Don't do that. A yellow simply can't cope with details. It just gets boring. Not only will he forget what you're talking about, but he'll also think that he doesn't need any of those details. His strength lies in the broad brushstrokes. You can easily ask a yellow to draw up a vision for the next 10 years, but don't ask him to explain how to make it happen. Conclusion. If you want to keep a yellow's attention, strip away as much of the minutiae as you possibly can. Always start with the big questions. It's perfectly fine that you know how to install the latest surround sound system, but don't tire your yellow friend with it. It's not for him. He just wants to know how to get the music started. It's just like with reds, if not worse. Yellows don't care about how things work, only that they work. So put away the instruction manual. They'll never open it. Follow your gut. It works every time. If I had a dollar for every time a yellow has explained a totally crazy decision by saying that it felt right, I could be sleeping at the Ritz. There's a study that shows that some people make better decisions if they only go on gut feeling. Whatever you do, never mention that to your yellow friend, or you'll never hear the end of it. It must feel right. A yellow can readily ignore the actual facts, so long as it feels right. Don't misunderstand this. A yellow understands perfectly well that some people look at facts, and that this is important. He's not stupid. It's just that he's not interested. He wants to feel his way. Do you want to get a yellow to make a decision? Try to put the Excel spreadsheets aside. Lean forward and say with a broad smile, "How does this feel?" He will understand exactly, and you'll get an answer. Conclusion. Just accept that a yellow feels his way. He has a high tolerance for uncertainty and isn't overly afraid of risks. Adapt to it. You can get through to him by showing him that you too follow your gut. No matter how wrong this might feel to you, this is the way to a yellow's heart. He'll recognize himself in you. You will become the best of friends. The sun will shine on you. This car is a prototype. The concept completely untested. No one has ever done this before. Perfect. While a red focuses on speed, a yellow focuses on the latest and greatest. New is synonymous with good. All yellows know that. And why not? Without creativity and new inventions, all development would simply grind to a halt, right? Everyone likes having a little excitement in their everyday life. The difference lies in how we define exciting. For a yellow, new means exciting. Yellows are so-called early adopters, the very first to try out new things. Check out who's wearing the latest fashion, who's the first to drive a new and preferably unusual model of car, who has the latest cell phone, and who knows what restaurant will be the newest sensation in a few months. How can they keep track of all this? Don't ask me. They probably devote some of their time at work to keep au courant on all things new and interesting. But they're also early in implementing new work methods and new concepts to sell goods and services. It's just great fun. Conclusion. Allow a yellow to devote himself to the latest thing. He'll love it. If you want to sell something to a yellow, use expressions like state-of-the-art, newly developed, and never-before-used. Your potential customer will really get into gear. No one else has ever tried this. I have to have it. He'll like you because you're so exciting and so interesting and, above all, innovative. Equip yourself with lots of energy because it can be challenging to keep up to date. But yellows will adore you. However, be prepared to be replaced rather quickly if they find someone else who is even more knowledgeable about newer things. You seem interesting. Want to know who I am? By now we've established that yellows like other people. They function best if they surround themselves with a crowd. Of course, yellows don't like everyone they meet, but they will give the majority a decent chance. You need to show a yellow that you're just as open and friendly as he is. If you're way too closed and private, he'll feel unwelcome. Why didn't you reply when he spoke to you? Why didn't you smile at the funny story about his dog? Why doesn't he know anything about you? What are your dreams? Insufficient personal connection can result in a strong sense of insecurity, and your relationship won't develop in a positive direction. If you're red or blue, you need to think carefully about how to get this to work. If you want to, of course. Conclusion. Become approachable. Demonstrate that you're available. Smile a lot. Be sure to have open body language. When a yellow wonders where you grew up, don't just respond with New York. Say that you lived in Chelsea and that you love jogging along the High Line and that a pickpocket stole your watch once while you were walking down Fifth Avenue and that you met the love of your life when she accidentally dropped a plate of fries on your pants at a restaurant. It may seem a bit unnecessary, but you should definitely show interest in the yellow as a person. Admittedly, it won't be difficult to find out things about him, because he'll freely tell you a great deal. But be sure to show that you are curious and interested. And remember that yellows are very susceptible to flattery. How to behave when you meet a yellow. To keep a yellow in good spirits, you need to rub him the right way. The problem will become obvious after a while. They won't get that much work done. I've looked at a group of yellows who were trying to solve a problem. They all spoke at the same time and had a great time. And when you asked them how things were going, they said, "Fantastic." But nothing got written down. To really make headway with yellows, you need to do more than just create a great atmosphere. Once you've tuned into their frequency, you need to do the following. Learn to tell whether a yellow is actually listening. I'm just going to say it like it is. Yellows are, beyond the shadow of a doubt, the worst listeners. Usually, they will never admit it. The very expression itself, awful listeners, is something negative, and they'll do anything to avoid negativity. Many yellows really see themselves as good listeners. Who knows where they got that idea? It's simply not true. Of course, there are yellows who listen when it suits them, or when they've already gotten what they wanted out of a conversation. But in most cases, forget about it. They don't want to listen. They want to talk. Yellows simply think that they can express everything far better than anyone else. The problem is that they neglect to listen to what anyone else is saying. Conclusion. When you're dealing with yellows, there are certain things you need to do. It doesn't matter if you're speaking to your partner about your summer vacation or to a colleague about an ongoing project. You need a plan of action. You need to have prepared yourself carefully. You have to know what your message is and exactly what response you need from them. You must persuade the yellow, happy person to answer your questions very concretely and hear him say, "Yes, I will be there at 4, just as I promised." Or, "Of course I'll notify the customer exactly what we have agreed to." But, big but, be prepared to follow up if it's important, because the yellow didn't write down any of it. Unless you manage to persuade him to write it on his calendar, of course. That would be the best way. But in all other contexts, you should expect that what you've said has gone in one ear and out the other. Learn how to respond to, "No problem, that won't take long at all." Yellows are optimists regarding time. That's just the way it is. Sure, your work can be done quickly, but rarely as quickly as a yellow thinks. This has to do with the fact that he simply can't plan or structure his life. I've personally worked with people who legitimately believed that they could manage 8 meetings per day, who thought that it only took 2 days to renovate an entire kitchen, and that it's possible to walk across Manhattan in 20 minutes. These are typical manifestations of a yellow's optimism. The problem is obvious. It's impossible to accomplish everything a yellow wants to do, particularly because he doesn't even know how long anything takes. And even if he does ask someone how long it takes, he doesn't listen to what the person says, because what he's saying is wrong. After all, the yellow believes he probably knows best. The other problem is that he won't get into gear when he should. Do you know anyone who has taken a day off to paint the bedroom and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon hasn't opened the can of paint yet? "I'll just do this first, then call so-and-so, then pop out for a bit, then..." Sometimes I wonder if the people who schedule the subways are all yellow. There's nothing nasty in this. It's just about a total inability to have a realistic sense of time and a genuine belief that this commodity is inexhaustible. I remember a dinner I went to with a few yellow friends. The pub had a policy of 90-minute reservations, which meant that if you got there 25 minutes late, there wouldn't be time for an appetizer or for dessert, because the kitchen couldn't manage it in time. My partner and I arrived 15 minutes early. We both have some splashes of blue in our profiles. We went to the table and sat down to wait for the others. Time passed. 40 minutes later, 25 minutes late, they arrived, joyfully joking about how they'd forgotten the time. We managed to order just a main course, eat it, and quickly pay for it before the next guest wanted his table. The strange thing was that when we spoke about the incident afterwards, their recollection was that they were just a few minutes late. They'd simply repressed the fact that they'd missed 30% of the dinner. Conclusion. Coordinate all appointments properly with yellows. Synchronise your watches. Explain very clearly that the plane takes off at 8 p.m. and that if he doesn't show up by then, he'll be left standing at the gate. Say it like it is. If he's not in his car outside your door 2 hours before the plane takes off, you'll drop down dead of a heart attack. Tell the yellow that you will be deeply irritated with him and that your friendship could be damaged due to his continual slip-ups. If the dinner is due to start at 7 p.m, invite everyone for that time, but make it 6:30 for your yellow friends. They'll arrive last anyway. They'll come with very well-worded excuses. Be prepared for very colourful stories. But also know that yellows will emphatically deny that they're optimists regarding time. They'll insist that they most certainly kept an eye on the clock. It was just that something happened on the way. It looks like a hand grenade went off in here. The most cluttered desks I've ever seen have all belonged to yellows. Computer screens with so many post-it notes stuck to them that you can barely see the screen. The most topsy-turvy garages and the most overloaded attics belong to yellows as well. But this is only the visible. Ask to look at a yellow person's calendar or handbag. Don't even think about looking in a yellow's closet. And this is still only the purely physical. Meetings are moved or forgotten. Things disappear. Whole cars are lost in parking lots. Keys are gone without a trace. Furthermore, many yellows have no ability to plan their day. They can go to the supermarket 5 times in a row and buy 3 things at a time because they didn't write down what they needed. This can be because they don't know what they want until they get there, or because they're sure they'll be able to recall the 19 things that they need to buy. Yellows have a very generous view of their own ability. They'll tell anyone who wants to listen that they have the best memory in the world. Conclusion. If you really want to help a yellow get organised, make sure he gets at least some structure in his life. Help out by creating a simple list. If you are going shopping, write down everything yourself. Your partner or pal will forget half of the items. Create a structure for him. Yellows are the ones who are most in need of structure in the form of diagrams and checklists. Paradoxically, they hate all of that. They won't let themselves be shoehorned into a system not of their own choosing. Be diplomatic. If you press too hard, you can get some powerful reactions. Why does everything have to be micromanaged? Are we living in a fascist state or what? Remember that for yellows, the most important thing is to look good. All the time. Me, me, me. Yellows have strong egos, just like reds. No doubt about that. They like getting attention. They throw themselves into the centre of things faster than anyone else. They enjoy themselves the most when they're in the middle of where the action is. Your yellow friend is a ray of sunshine, talking louder and faster than everyone else and lighting up a room with his behaviour. Shine all the spotlight on me. See me, hear me, like me. But this means that no one else gets any space. Many conversations end up with the yellow individual loudly and resonantly speaking about his experience or his opinion. No matter what you are talking about, war, starvation, dieting, cars, executives, gardens, A yellow will bring up a story in which he himself is the protagonist. If he doesn't have any story, he'll make one up. Their thoughts often begin with the word I. I want, I think, I can, I know, I will. It's quite natural. They like other people, but there is one thing they like even more. Themselves. Conclusion. Yellows need to understand that there are other people in the room or working on the project besides themselves. You can never allow yellows to consume all the oxygen. They need to hear from someone with courage and perseverance that they have to let others enter the conversation or whatever it may be. It's impossible to explain this in the midst of a conversation with others present. It won't fall on fertile ground. A yellow can be very offended by such criticism. He'll think things like, "Everyone else just thinks of themselves," or, "I'm the only one who looks out for me." This type of feedback must be given discreetly and in a positive way. It depends a little bit on how yellow the person in question is, so you will probably need a plan. Be prepared for one thing. You may very well become enemies in the process. You're definitely taking a risk here. Hearing that you are egocentric and self-centered is extremely unflattering. Yellows will understand this. They're not stupid. But they will just think that your analysis is wrong. So you'll have to work a lot here. Or swap pals.